Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back. Hour two of the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Thursday, Friday eve, as I would call it, edition. We got a fine guest. He is former U.S. Attorney James Santel. He hosts his own show around here, Morning Cannoli, Saturday mornings, 9 to 11. Jim, I appreciate the generosity of your time, sir, because while we've talked about the civil lawsuit for alleged tax fraud by the former president, and we've talked about the paperwork crimes, the indefensible taking of classified documents to Mar-a-Lago by the former president. But, you know, I've heard lots of Republicans try to defend it. But, Jim, the January 6th, it's kind of taken a back burner. The coup, the insurrection against the United States government. First and foremost, the former president came out today. The House, I believe, passed the Electoral College Reform Act, at least the House version of the bill, and Donald Trump saw this rebuke as something of a rebuke of the attitude of the former vice president. See, I told you, Mike Pence, you could have overturned the Electoral College count. You should have done it. You should have sent it back to the states. Rigged election fraud, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But Jim, the man's still doing it in real time. His takeaway is Pence always had the power.
Right. And again, he's just plain wrong about that. And not to return to my fundamental notion that Donald Trump has never and continues to be completely uneducated about how government works. We never had to contemplate a law to shore up the Electoral Count Act just because everyone understood what it meant, which is that you get properly certified electors from all the states. We bring them forward. Frankly, even the process in front of the entire Congress every January has been ministerial in nature. We know what the results are. When the Electoral College gets together, we know what the results are going to be in early November. But we go through that process because it's in the Constitution. It memorializes what we anticipate happening in our government. But there's never until this past turnaround of administrations been this notion that somehow between the vice president and certifying an alternative set of electors from 6-7 states, perhaps including Wisconsin as well, that all of this is subject, frankly, to debate after the election, after the Electoral College has met in December. And so what the Congress does today is, all right, if we need to shore this up, we'll make it clear that what the vice president does that day is simply uses letter opener and opens up the envelopes and reads out loud what they are, that his role is ministerial. And that indeed there should be and there can be only one certified set of electors going to the Congress on that day. We don't have alternative electors, which again, we never had to contemplate before the craziness of this past experience. And so, yes, responding as Congress should do routinely to remedy the problems that have come forward, to make certain this doesn't happen again, leave it to Donald Trump to find a way and articulate it to somehow see this as an affirmation of his rightness, when in fact it's an affirmation that what he tried to do with others on January 6th, hopefully very much the target of the federal Department of Justice, that was wrong, that was illegal, and it was an attempt to overturn the government of the United States of America.
And Jim, you think you would have this unanimous effort to clean it up, close all the loopholes, take away any doubt in the future. Let's clarify the rules of the game. The vice president's just there to count them, right? And you would think that the congressional delegation of the state of Wisconsin, where you're at and I'm at, would vote for this with unanimity. But they didn't, Jim. And, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but Brian Steil, Glenn Grothman, Mike Gallagher, Scott Fitzgerald, and Tom Tiffany all voted against this Electoral College reform, all voted against cleaning up any qualms that we might have as an electorate, really talked about their side. So what they're saying is we want the option to pull a fast one anytime we don't like the outcome of the election.
That's exactly it. And again, as your question, your commentary underscores, this should be completely apolitical, right? Nonpartisan. It may well be that in a few weeks here, in 2024, 2028, there may be elected a Republican president, a Republican Congress, House representatives, maybe Democratic, who knows, maybe something in between. But this is about ensuring that whatever the people say, whatever their votes are, whatever they're counted, in the end, that they are properly understood, that they are properly counted. One says, you know, that it's not about election day fraud. It's about counting fraud, which is what this is really aimed at, to ensure that indeed the votes of Americans are properly understood, that they're properly embraced. You'd think that everybody would want to do that. And once again, what those votes of frankly, majority of the congressional delegation from this state reflect, we're not concerned about that. We're concerned about a base. We're concerned about people who are going to look at us and say, gosh, you voted in a way that's contrary to fill in the blank. Donald Trump, MAGA Republicans generally, some other very perverse approach to government. And again, it is not premised upon what's good for the citizenry generally, regardless of how elections go. It's based upon what is advantageous now, what will sell in a few weeks, what will sell in 2 years. And that is especially, I would offer, cynical, hugely cynical when it comes to being an elected representative from Wisconsin or any place in the union that's likewise opposing this very apolitical down the road. Let's clean it up. Let's ensure we do not have 60 pieces of lawsuits down the road. We don't have all of these congressional inquiries down the road. Let's do this just once and correct it and move on. That's what they tried to do and got opposition to it. It is stunning, just plain stunning.
Folks, you are listening to the Devils Advocates Radio Show. Finest of guests, he is James Antel, former U.S. attorney, friend of ours, host of Morning Cannolis, tune him in Saturday mornings right here on Civic Media. Jim, the January 6th committee, obviously they sort of took the summer off. I mean, they left me, you know, stunned each and every time. New evidence presented to the American people, really without any retort from the Jim Jordans, the pains in the asses that could have been serving on that committee. So unlike the prior efforts at impeachment, where you'd have disjointed sort of presentations, it's actually been pretty coherent, Jim. And yes, it's moved the needle to some degree, and it's going to start anew, a weekday event, my understanding, September 28th. We intend to broadcast it here. They haven't told us yet what they intend to talk about, Jim. But we know that Jenny Thomas apparently reportedly has agreed to be voluntarily interviewed. And she, of course, was pushing awfully hard on the chief of staff, Mark Meadows, to try and overcome the election. Well, we, the American people, do you think, Jim, they'll videotape that interview? They've shown us prior videotaped interviews. So voluntary or not, at some point, I'd like to think we, the American people, get to see what she said.
You certainly would anticipate that, right? Because while most of the interviews before the committee have been voluntary, and even those folks who plainly have been affiliated with Donald Trump and that side of things up to now may not have been thrilled about being there, to see them on that screen above the committee members, to listen to them directly, hugely compelling. This is not theater. This is reality. And if we do have a chance to hear, again, they do an excellent job of pulling out from what will probably be hours of an interview with Jenny Thomas, the spouse of the sitting Supreme Court justice, hours of her testimony. We'll pull out maybe 4, 5, 6, 7 minutes of it, scattered throughout the presentation, descriptions of what we're talking about, the key things that she says. And why is her testimony important? We know about all these engagements that she's had on this false elector scheme, including right here in Wisconsin, encouraging people, as she said, to take action to ensure the stability of the future of America. basically encouraging these false electors. Is that relevant? You bet it is. It's right at the core of what they're looking at. Reaching out again to Arizona, these conspiracy theories that she articulated, her connections with John Eastman, the architect of this memorandum that put together this way of overturning the election. And again, to get back to Mark Meadows, communications with him, contemporaneous with what was going on in January 6th, encouraging him to stay strong and ensure that we don't give in to these crazy people who want the government to be legitimate and honest. Is that relevant? Absolutely. Can we look forward to this committee staff putting up the things that she says, trying to explain those communications away? And we know the committee already has them. So now we're just asking her, explain this, Ms. Thomas. Tell us what you were trying to do. What was your intent, your purpose? And were you effective, do you think, in moving this needle forward and getting this insurrection underway? Hugely compelling. And I wouldn't be surprised if it is, in fact, one of the key pieces of this, of one of the next hearings coming up this fall.
Okay, two thoughts. We are on the clock, and the January 6th committee is on the clock. Jim, before we run out of time with you, our fine guest, the January 6th committee has to put forth some sort of report. If it doesn't come prior to the midterms, it will certainly have little impact to no impact, Jim, because if the Republicans win back the House, they're going to disband this committee and burn it all down. It'll be impeachment or bust come the spring. So, Jim, when do we see the report? When's the final assignment due?
Right. I'd like to think that right now there is a draft that is 90% completed. And what's going on right now, yeah, we're talking to more people. We understand there's going to be more video that we've never seen before when this is done in front of the cameras. It's pretty much done right now. And the work that they're doing is, even with Ginny Thomas, is going to be adding on those kinds of things that give it more flavor. They are obliged to get this out, not just politically, but for the interest of the government. It's got to come in the month of October so that people can either read it or at least listen to this fine program and hear us digest it when it comes out. So they've got some sense of what indeed happened. It's coming out soon.
And Jim, based on the testimony, turning to Georgia very briefly as we run out of time here, Brian Kemp is not going to be compelled to testify until after the election. So one must assume any state charges against Trump would come after the election because they're still trying to gather in testimony evidence.
Right. She's not, Willis is not going to indict anybody before then. But again, a very aggressive prosecution going forward, their investigation, anticipate sometime, I would think, early 2023.
James Hentel, our fun guest. Thank you so much, Jim.
Always a pleasure, Mike. Good to be with you.
Everyone except Jim, come back. More Devil's Advocates.
The Devil's Advocates, radio for the 99%.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Thank you, James Santel. Always great to have him around, but you got to be careful, man. You let the hour roll, the counselor will charge you 2 hours. He does a 2-hour show each Saturday morning, Jim Santel, my good buddy. Morning Cannolis. Please check him out. He probably plays out live in your local marketplace. Saturdays 9 to 11 right here on the Civic Media Network. And we're going to take our fine callers right now. Time for you. Thank you, all the patient callers, at 844-967-2789. You know they're all going to be frustrated. I didn't want you, Curdy. I was holding for Jim. Sorry, Jim had to move on. Dick from Madison, how you doing, man?
Good. Congratulations on all these new stations.
Yeah.
This is just phenomenal.
You got to imagine how hard the team is working behind the scenes here. And we're producing the damn finest radio in the state of Wisconsin concurrently. So
maybe the National Democratic Party will finally figure this out too.
Who? No, I tease. Yeah. I'm not doing this for the Democratic Party, Dick. Let's be clear.
No, I know it. Ginny Thomas, you stole my thunder talking about her and answered some questions, but I don't know. Kind of a funny note, I'm going to ask him this Saturday because I love his show. You know, here's another reason that Trump would really hate Mitt Romney. If what he asserted years back, remember when he ran for president in, what, 2012? Corporations are people, my friend. Well, then this isn't a civil case anymore, is it?
Excellent point you make. You know what, though, Dick? I mean, first time I ever saw Donald Trump in person, you know, live speechifying, he took the stage in Des Moines. I believe it was late January of 2015. And Trump had threatened prior to run for president. But he came out on the stage, and it was mostly these Christian conservatives, these Iowa farmers, quite frankly, all come to Des Moines to see them, some candidates. And Donald Trump's greatest brag that day is, "You're going to be so proud of me. I'm so rich." And then he described during the course of his little speechifying that the value of the Trump brand is affected based on his mood on a given day. And, you know, if he's in a great mood, you know, his assets might be worth $3 billion more. And I'm thinking this is some slipshod math he's justifying his thing with. But here's the point.
Well,
my only point, and then I'll let you go, Dick. My only point is I always knew he was a tax cheat. I'm not shocked that he would steal papers, classified or otherwise. I'm really frustrated that we lose track of the fact that the guy tried to perpetrate a coup against the U.S. government, and he's still freaking walking the streets and playing golf. Sorry, you go, Dick.
Oh, it's very annoying, but if you even go from what he just said, his mood's really poor right now, so he must be just about in the poorhouse. But the other thing, there were articles about him, Crute, nonstop in early 2017 after he took the presidency. The New York Times was running stuff nonstop that basically this guy, it's a shell game, he's a pauper. He's really, he's not worth much of anything.
Yeah.
And the whole thing's a scam, and it always has been. And now you're even, they're even questioning the fact that the money that he paid this, prepaid this attorney with, I'm sure you've, I'm preaching to you, this is ridiculous for me to tell you, but that money was possibly even raised illegally, just like Bannon with the wall money.
Oh, you know, think? You mean Trump misappropriating dollars? My understanding is he's been using like Trump PAC dollars to pay Melania's stylist.
Yes.
That's a campaign expense, isn't it?
Well, of course it is.
Then what's he running for? You know what I mean? Before you can have campaign expenses, don't you have to have a campaign? But I'm sorry I interrupt, Dick. You go again.
No. People have had enough of me. Move on to some other callers, but it's just hilarious. The guy in that thing last night with Hannity was just the icing on the cake.
You're absolutely right, Dick. People do want to hear us move on to other callers. Thanks for listening, though. 844-967-2789. Here's another friend. It's our pal, Mark from the SAC. Mark, welcome back.
Hey Mike. And congratulations on the more stations. Yeah, as a auditor, that one of my jobs in auditing was looking at valuations of property that the state was participating in the purchase of, that it has to be true and just, the valuation of it. You can't pretend that, you know, the circumstances exist on the properties where they don't exist, you know, to increase the value of the property. It's just utter nonsense that he's saying this stuff. Oh, the bank would have known better. There's, if you sign this stuff off, and you were actually worked in the market, so you know this, when you sign it, you're certifying what the value of this property is, the appraised value of this property is. You can't just pull it out of your rump and say this is what the value is, or pretend that, you know, there's gold-plated toilet, or there's solid gold toilets when there's they're painted avocado gold in the bathrooms.
Well, and of course, Mark, but where I draw the distinction is, you know, I'm married to a real estate appraiser, and it is a professional opinion of value, and different professionals can have different opinions of value, but where you start breaking that down is when the guy's tripling his square footage. You know, I'm in the radio business. It's all about how big your tower is. Well, if I claim I got a 100-foot tower to the insurance company, and then I go tell the bank I got a 1,000-foot tower, well, one of those figures is probably accurate and true, but you can measure square footage. You know what I mean? That stops being an opinion issue, Mark. That is pure premeditated fraud, and it's indefensible because it's not defendable by my appraiser thinks it's worth more than your appraiser does. Well, my appraiser doesn't believe it's 30,000 square feet, Trump.
And that's the point I was making, is you can't pretend there's access to a property when there really isn't access to the property. Is a method to, you know, just an example that I had, you know, could give as one. But, and this whole thing that I imagined in my head that I've declassified these documents, the documents are declassified. And the point that I continued to make is that Donald Trump had no business taking any of those documents at all, period.
You make a good point, Mark, but I blame Evan on the fact that we're out of time. Come back, more Devil's Advocates rolling through the happy hour. More of your calls, 844-967-2789.
Listen, you motherfuckers. Tell her I'm rich, and I'm good-looking, and I have a rapist wit.
Fake.
1, 2, make you wanna...
The Devil's Advocates, because freedom.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, rolling through the Thursday Happier Happy Hour. Happy to announce on tomorrow's big program, former U.S. senatorial candidate Sarah Godlewski. She is the current Wisconsin State Treasurer, and we're going to discuss what comes next for her politically. And I think there is the Dobbs decision motivating what she's got in mind. So we're going to talk with Sarah Godlewski. I had a nice chat with her today. We're going to have a nice chat about 4:30 tomorrow on the big airwaves. Wanted to talk a little bit more about Wisconsin politics. Unlike the state of California, where they listen to us in Eureka, California, and you can always join us here at 844-967-2789. We have no way for the people of Wisconsin to affect law. There's no way. You know, we can go, lobby our legislature, and then if they can pass it and get it through both chambers and the governor signs off on it, then we pass legislation in the state of Wisconsin. And we can do referendums, but only on constitutional amendments. So to do that effectively, it's got to pass through two consecutive sessions of the legislative body here. And then, and only then, referendums can be put on the ballot for the consideration of the electorate. Now, recent history hasn't fared so well for my lefty friends. One of the questions on the ballot is, how do we determine the Chief Justice of the Wisconsin Supreme Court? And seniority had always been the determinant factor. And we had an esteemed justice, Shirley Abrahamson. And they effectively stripped the power away from this quote-unquote liberal jurist because there was a Republican legislature. They could pass it twice, put it on the ballot, and said, shouldn't it be just a random vote? Shouldn't, you know, the conservative bloc be able to pick the Chief Justice, who, I'll remind you, if you're unaware, also sets the agenda for the court. Effectively, in a big way, sets what cases might appear before the court. So there's power in being the chief. So anyways, you know, that's the only way we can affect stuff. So it's through referendum only. Only through constitutional amendment, which then give us a chance after the legislature have told us what's good for us, then we the people get to vote on it. Prior to the taking the Chief Justice title away from Shirley Abrahamson, I believe the prior constitutional referendum, one man, one woman, basically banning same-sex marriage in the state of Wisconsin. Well, obviously, that was overturned by an act of the federal courts, although don't tell Clarence Thomas, he'd flip it back the other way. Obergefell. But until that happened, same-sex marriage was illegal under Wisconsin constitutional amendment through a referendum process. So the only two examples I can remember relatively recently, some are smarter than I, they could look it up, but you know, just going by memory. It hasn't worked out so great for, let's call it the left, the liberal causes, constitutional amendments. the only referendum that we, the citizens of the state of Wisconsin, can use, but only after the legislature, you know, gives us permission. Well, our friend Jesse Apoyan over at the Cap Times, Tony Evers, the governor of the state of Wisconsin, pursues a new path towards overturning Wisconsin abortion ban. Tony, in the last couple of days, has come out advocating for a direct referendum, allowing the public to make a decision. We all live in the state of Wisconsin. What should our abortion policies be? Because under current 1849 law, it's basically banned. And providers can be, you know, sued and prosecuted. Let's see what our pal Jesse reports. Governor Tony Evers on Wednesday announced a new effort to repeal Wisconsin's 173-year-old abortion ban, calling on lawmakers to vote on a proposal to allow voters to introduce statewide referendums. Hear, hear, sir. Absolutely. Why should we, the citizens of the state of Wisconsin? You know, you can recall a politician through, what, signature petition? Go get a recall ballot. Well, you know, in other states, they can actually go and get their neighbors. If you get enough neighbors, you can qualify to put something, a question on the ballot. It's called legalized marijuana. Let's say tax policy in California. A lot of other states, Michigan, their abortion policy is coming through referendum currently. But we don't have that option available to us. Tony Evers thinks we should. What do you think Republicans will say? Let's read a little further in Jesse Apoyan's work. Republican legislative leaders all but confirmed the proposal will go nowhere because they're not really in it for democracy. They're semi-fascist. I read on. The Democratic governor signed an executive order calling the legislature into special session to take up a proposed constitutional amendment, allowing voters to engage in a direct ballot initiative, a process by which voters can act outside of the legislature to vote on proposed laws and constitutional amendments or repeal existing legislation. You know what? That sounds a lot too much like democracy for Republicans. Well, they can either jam up the works through the legislative gerrymander. They've got this massive advantage, even though they can't seemingly win statewide election with any sort of consistency. But if they fall ass backwards into also controlling the governor's mansion, Tim Michaels wins, well, we get disastrous governance. And if he doesn't win, well, then they just sit there and they antagonize the Democratic governor, in this case, Tony Evers. But you know what really doesn't ever get served? We, the constituents, we, the badgers, we, the people of this state, we're not being served by this process. So I don't love everything Tony Evers has ever proposed, but this one I like quite a bit because this one sounds like freaking democracy to me. The Democratic governor signed an executive order calling the legislature into special session. Now, we talked about that, right? To take up a proposed constitutional amendment, allowing voters to engage in direct ballot initiatives. Crudy likes that idea. A process by which voters can act outside the legislature. Well, let's have some of that. Now, under Wisconsin law, Evers can call the legislature in his special session, but he can't compel lawmakers to do a damn thing. Here's a quote. Evers, half the people of our state have fewer rights today than they did 3 months ago, and fewer rights than their mothers and grandmothers did before them. And that is BS, Evers said during a news conference referring to the U.S. Supreme Court's June decision in Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health Organization, effectively overturning a woman's right to end a pregnancy. And the Dobbs ruling triggered Wisconsin's abortion ban, passed in 1849. We've talked about it a lot. No exceptions for the life, which was passed and offers an exception for the life of the mother, but not in cases of rape or incest or the mother's health. Evers and Attorney General Josh Call have sued. We've talked about that. Now, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and Senate Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu, Republicans, accused Evers of pushing the issue of abortion in an effort to ignore his failure to address rising crime and runaway inflation caused by his liberal DC allies. Well, you could say anything, right? You can say anything. It doesn't make it true. What the hell does that have to do with whether or not we, the voters, should have direct representation on the ballot through referendum? Tony's record's got nothing to do with this, Voss, LeMahieu. Here's what they say. Hopefully voters see through his desperate political stunt. I see through your desperate political obstructionism. I see through that, Voss and LeMahieu. I read on. As he, Evers, seeks a second term, he faces a challenge from Republican businessman Tim Michaels. Now, Michaels supports banning abortion with no exceptions for rape or incest. The 1849 law is the exact mirror of my position. In my position is the exact mirror of the 1849 law as well, which has an exception for the life of the mother, Michael said in an interview on WISN TV. The Marquette University Law School poll released last week found 61% of Wisconsin voters opposed the Dobbs decision. Only 30% of voters supported it. So we're 2-1 against, basically. 83% of voters believe abortion should be allowed in cases of rape or incest. 10% said they should not. That's the Michaels 10%, the most extreme 10%. But guess what? We don't get any of that. We, the Wisconsin voters, our wives, our daughters, our sisters, don't have the rights because they're not going to be extended. We're being governed by an 1849 law, and they're not going to clean this one up. And we, the people, have no way of changing that circumstance. So they can say, Tony's political stunt, whatever. Okay, set it aside. Shouldn't we, the people, still have this right of representation through direct referendum? You know what? I'll speak for myself. Me and my neighbors, we'll get together. We'll put a petition together. And we'll craft it, and we'll tell you what we want our laws to be like. Wow, what a novel concept. Instead, we have a gerrymandered majority force-feeding us crap. Sorry, excuse my coarse language. I'm going to go back to reading a quote from Tony Evers, as reported by my friend Jesse Apoyan. On the ceiling of the governor's conference room in the Capitol is the phrase I've often repeated over the last 3 years. The will of the people is the law of the land. Well, right now in Wisconsin, when it comes to reproductive freedom, the will of the people isn't the law of the land, but it damn well should be. Salty, Tony. According to the National Conference of State Legislatures, 23 states have popular referendum processes. 23 states, which allow voters to approve or repeal an act of the legislature. And 24 states have citizen initiatives, which allow voters to put proposed statutes, in some cases, constitutional amendments, on the ballot. In August, 59% of voters in Kansas, red is red Kansas, voted against removing abortion rights from their state constitution. And their voices were heard, right? In November, voters in Michigan, California, and Vermont will vote on proposals to enshrine abortion rights, and voters in Montana and Kentucky will vote on proposals to restrict abortion access. And Evers' proposal would allow Wisconsinites to potentially do the same by petitioning the Wisconsin Elections Commission to add such a question to the ballot. According to the governor's office, if enough signatures were gathered and validated, a vote would be held in the next general election at least 120 days after the petition was filed. A simple majority vote would be required to decide the referendum. That sounds a lot like democracy, folks. Because the governor's proposal comes in the form of a constitutional amendment, it would need to be approved by two consecutive legislative sessions, then approved by the voters to take effect. And of course, what Jesse doesn't hammer home one more time is Republicans will never, ever go for that form of direct representation, that direct democracy, that we the people get a vote and get to say how we're governed. We don't have that here any longer. I mean, I love the state of Wisconsin. I've lived here most of my entire life. But it's not because of the good governance in the last 10 or 12 years. The legislative gerrymander has left even Republicans wanting. Ask them. They're not represented either. Do you think Robin Voss represents the vast majority of Republicans in the state? Hell no. Hell no. Hell, he almost lost his primary. He may lose the general election. Joel Jacobson, write-in candidate. Consider it. Come back. More Devil's Advocates. We're not done yet. Your call could be next. Give us a call. Consider it. 844-967-2789.
The Devil's Advocates. Never personal, only politics.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Friday Eve edition. You know, tomorrow might get so jammed up with grievances, I think I'm going to lay one out there for you right now. An opinion piece over at the Washington Post, Eric Wimple. Poor, uncomfortable Brett Baer. Brett Baer is sort of the thicker Foxy News, and he's supposed to be in the news division. I've seen this guy at the national debate formats. You know, you see Brett Baer, he's quite full of himself. Anyways, here's the reporting. Fox News sometimes has trouble reckoning with MAGA beast it is so carefully nurtured. When then-host Megyn Kelly pressed Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump in a August 2015 debate, for example, the resulting uproar cleaved the network. Daytime anchor Shepard Smith, who told the truth about Trump, left the network after clashing with anti-Trump cheerleader Tucker rhymes with Tucker Carlson. And now there's the case of uncomfortable Brett Baer, the top news anchor at Fox News. Brett Baer is the top news anchor at Fox News. 2 days after the election day in 2020, Baer sent an email to colleagues expressing concern about the network's early and decisive call to put Arizona's 11 Electoral College votes in the column for Democratic candidate Joe Biden. Here's the quote. And I went to J school, and this is, I cannot believe the man put this in written form. The situation is getting uncomfortable, really uncomfortable. I'm having to defend this on air, wrote Baer to Fox News president and executive editor Jay Wallace, according to a new book, The Divider, Trump in the White House, a newly by Peter Baker and Susan Glasser. The Fox News decision desk, wrote Baer, was holding on for pride. He also wrote, according to Baker and Glasser, that Trump campaign was pissed about the situation. Here's again a quote, a written quote, apparently. It's hurting us. The sooner we pull it, even if it gives us major egg, you know, egg on his face, and we put it back in his column, the better we are, in my opinion. As the book notes, Arizona was never in Trump's column. Fox News and the Associated Press were just outliers in calling the state for Biden as early as the election night. As this blog explained at the time, again, I'm reading from Eric Wimple, it's no coincidence that Fox News and AP pulled the trigger on Arizona around the same time. The two organizations had entered into a partnership with the University of Chicago to generate data driven to drive election calls. Though both outlets maintain independent decision desks, the system, they say, is an upgrade over exit polling. Other big-time election night players rely on separate data stream, and prominent outlets waited more than a week to call Arizona for Biden, days after they'd called the entire race for him. The Fox News decision desk is one of the few remaining oases of credibility in that organization. It's headed by Arnon Mishkin, an elections nerd who's been on the beat at Foxy News since the 90s. It also achieved glorious virality on election night 2012 when it called Ohio for incumbent President Barack Obama, prompting a famous on-air meltdown from pundit Carl looks like a ham rove. The pushback identified in Baer's email was real. Mishkin himself apparently acknowledged as much on election night when he appeared on air to defend the already controversial call. Here was the quote at that time. "We made the correct call, and that's why we made the correct call. When we made it, I'm sorry." In response to the Baker Glasser revelations, Brett Baer said this: "The full context of the email is not reported in the book. I never said the Trump campaign was really pissed. That was from an external email that I referenced within my note. This was an email sent after election night. In the immediate days following the election, the vote margins in Arizona narrowed significantly, and I communicated these changes to our team along with what people on the ground were saying and predicting district by district. I wanted to analyze at that point what the vote margin would have been considering pulling the call for Biden. I also noted that I fully supported our decision desk and would defend it on air." That's a whole lot of defense. Why not just release the email, Brett? The Eric Wimple blog asked Baer for the document, but it hasn't heard back. Foxy News issued this statement: "Fox News made an election night call of historic magnitude and was the first to do so. We stood by the call in the days that followed. It was proven correct, and other news organizations eventually joined us." And that's 100% accurate, though we can't allow the network to leave the impression that it acted courageously throughout the week. As Baker and Glasser note, Wallace overruled Michigan on calling Nevada for Biden on Friday, November 6th. Doing so would have made Fox News the first network to declare that Biden had won the contest. A couple of months later, Foxy News announced personnel changes in two key staffers. Bill Salmon and Chris Steierwalt left the organization. Salmon was summarily fired, according to the book. Steierwalt later wrote that he too was fired, although the network called it a restructuring. The attempt by Trump world to contest and overturn the 2020 election assumed many guises, the most despicable of which included the January 6th insurrection. Talk about it on this little show once in a while. Legal attempts to overturn legitimately cast ballots and the innovation of fake electors. Merely pressuring Fox News to rescind its Arizona call by comparison was an innocuous exercise, and one that a guy like Baer, you might suppose, would have the gumption to resist without sending a whiny email up the chain of command. Consider that this is a nationally prominent media figure on the so-called news side of Fox News with an annual salary of $12 million, according to Brian Stelter's book. Also, "We regret that this handsomely paid star felt uncomfortable in his job during the pivotal days following the 2020 election." As he concludes here, "Journalism, though, is often uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable to come face-to-face with someone covering critically for months. It's uncomfortable to slam your wife's boss, especially mine. That guy sucks. It's uncomfortable to cover wars, natural disasters, and mass shootings. Here's what should be even more uncomfortable: revising the considered elections decisions of your colleagues to appease your core viewership." I think we can give you 30 seconds, Wisco Paul. Say it quick, buddy.
I can say this really quick. It's a quick question for you. When is the last time, other than hiring Gableman, Voss and the boys even worked in this state, did anything? I mean, it's been a long time. I don't even know if I can go back that far.
Well, they take the year off. It's an election year. They were done early in the spring, I think, Paul. You know, mostly it's just campaigning these days. Paul, thanks for the call, man. Please listen on Friday. We'll air some grievances up here with Sarah Godlewski and tell you what's next for her politically. Thank you to my fine guest, James Santel. Don't forget, listen in Saturday mornings, Morning Cannolis. Here in Madison, we've got the Empowered Caregivers going out at 7 in the Shaw. It's Raised in the Wisco with Joel Clayfish. Native Roots Radio at all civic media markets is next. Thanks for listening. Have a great night.
What does the fox say?
All right. See you later.